If you were to say CSNY to the youth of today, they would probably think it's some kind of police show based in America somewhere. But to those of us of a certain vintage, CSNY are, of course, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And that acronym is the title of a new book, and the author Peter Doggett joins us now. Good morning, Peter.
Yeah, good morning.
I mean, I've been a follower for years, but I'm still never convinced when I play their records on the radio which version I'm playing. Was that CSNY or was that CSN I've just played?
Well, you're already opening a can of worms because that is from a CSNY album, but actually Neil Young's not on that track.
There you go. I was just reading this morning, in fact, I just talking to our listeners about it, that there's a Joni Mitchell 75th birthday concert going on in London tonight, in Southend of all places, and Graham Nash is one of the performers at it tonight.
Oh, right. I hadn't heard about that. There was a concert in the States that I know he performed at recently. Well, they're still close friends. And, of course, they used to be an item, but that's going way, way back.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's go way, way back, because you have to with this lot, because, of course, they're a supergroup. And to be a supergroup, you first of all had to be super somewhere else. And they certainly were. Of course, Crosby was the Birds. Can't get much more super than that. Stephen Stills for Buffalo Springfield. Graham Nash was always the one that was a bit odd for me, because the Hollies are not somebody you'd think of as springing up somebody like Graham Nash.
Well, that's actually quite an interesting one, because they came along in the immediate aftermath of the Beatles, only a few months behind. And so they were very much seen, I think, probably in Britain and elsewhere as being like a not quite so good version of the Beatles. But people who knew, people who listened to music, and that included the likes of David Crosby and Stephen Stills, they could hear Graham Nash's harmony vocals on the songs that the Hollies had out. And they recognised that he was a rare talent. And so they were really keen to meet him.
Wow, that's extraordinary. So they basically tracked him down?
More or less, yes. Well, they all had a mutual friend in Mama Cass of the Mamas and Papas, if you remember them.
Yeah.
And she was the person who seemed to be the centre of that whole Laurel Canyon scene in California. Yeah. And she knew everybody. Everybody went to her house. Everybody was in her pool. Everybody was smoking things they shouldn't have been smoking around her pool. And gradually, they all came together.
And, of course, bizarrely, you know, to pluck somebody from the Hollies, you'd think he'd be a kind of prim and proper guy, but quite the opposite. He fitted right in, didn't he?
Indeed. I mean, he... Once again, Mama Cass was the connection. She had been doing all sorts of interesting chemicals with David Crosby, and then she introduced Graham Nash to other interesting chemicals. And so they had a sort of very high connection, let's put it that way.
Absolutely. And a unique sound. And, of course, when you put these kind of supergroups together, we were just talking this morning, actually, I can't remember the last supergroup that was put together in our kind of era, but that was a supergroup. And when you put people like that together, you've got a lot of egos in the same room, and they clearly were able to overcome that.
Well, yes, not for very long, no. Unfortunately. I mean, it started out as a trio. It was Crosby, Stills and Nash, and the reason they got together was because they were all free from their bands. They'd all had enough of being held back by the groups they'd been in, and they discovered that when the three of them sang together, it sounded like nothing else on earth.
Yeah.
It was such a wonderful sound. It was so exciting for them and for everybody else. And so immediately they wanted to make a record. And it would have stayed Crosby, Stills and Nash if they hadn't wanted to go on the road, and they needed more musicians. And so, long story short, it was suggested to Stephen Stills that he should recruit Neil Young, who he had been with in the Buffalo Springfield. Now, Neil Young had a history of letting Stephen Stills down at vital moments in the history of Buffalo Springfield. And guess what? He carried on doing it.
My goodness.
But that introduced... I can't think of another band in music history who had four sort of equal songwriters, four equal singers. Yeah. Usually, you know, you've got the Beatles and the Stones. There are two guys who are the main guys,
yeah,
and the rest of them are just the also-rans. But with CSNY, you've got four people all competing for the front of the stage, and it's very hard to get something that combustible to last without catching fire.
Well, absolutely. And as somebody who's had some songwriting success myself, putting people in a room together is fraught at the best of times. But if you're putting four superstars together who have very unique skills of their own, that must have been, to be a fly on the wall in one of their early writing sessions must have been awesome.
Well, I think the one thing they did that was very sensible was they wrote separately.
I think
if they tried to write together, they would have lasted even less long than they did.
So they
always used to have what they called the reality rule, which was they would individually bring the songs to the four of them, and if all four of them liked it, they would think about doing it. If one of them didn't, then it didn't matter how much the guy who'd written it liked it, it was out, it went. So that was the way the band worked. But of course, in the beginning, it's high on ideals and other things, but it's particularly high on the sort of late 60s optimism, this utopian vision of brotherhood and comradeship and so on. And as soon as you introduce vast amounts of money and fame, obviously that competition gets a lot more perilous to the group's
and we talk about them being unique, but they really were unique. And actually, if you think about it, you can see the reasons why. I mean, these were people who really knew what they were doing. And when the stars collided, they collided in a spectacular fashion.
Yes, and they were able to take that out onto the road as well. The other thing beyond their fabulous music that these four guys had was that in their different ways, they all reflected different sides of the counterculture of the 60s, the 60s underground, the hippie movement.
Yeah.
They were really passionate about their revolutionary politics. They were passionate about free love. They were passionate about being open to the universe. And so when people went to see them in concert, they almost saw a reflection of themselves on the stage. So that really helped them to build up a huge audience.
Is it true that when they performed at the original Woodstock, that was their only third show together?
Almost, it was their second.
Wow! Yeah, not bad, eh? I think they probably had a little more rehearsal for the second time round.
Possibly, but yes, I mean. What a terrifying situation to find yourself in. I mean, in front of 500,000 people.
God.
And at the start, particularly Crosby, Stills and Nash went out, the three of them with just one acoustic guitar between them and did Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. And they've got the eyes of the world watching them. All around the back of the stage are musical friends of theirs who've come to see, well, these guys are supposed to be good. Let's find out if they're really are.
Just extraordinary. And of course, we think of sex and drugs and rock and roll being a bit of a cliche, but they really were a band who portrayed that to the nth degree, weren't they?
Absolutely, yes. And the other thing about them was that they were completely open about what they were doing. If you interviewed them back then, they were fantastically open about what drugs they liked, who they were sleeping with, what they thought of President Nixon, which wasn't very much,
yeah.
et cetera. So these were not people who were being shy about their opinions. They were all very opinionated guys.
And they were kind of unique in a way in that each of the members were also recording solo albums right at the height of their success as a group. And we don't see that very often.
No, not at all. I mean, if you use the comparison of the Beatles had to wait until they'd broken up before they were allowed to be solo artists,
yeah,
as well. But that was built into the CSNY idea from the start. They always used to say that we're not a group, we're four guys who work together.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, when you're successful as a band, then everybody spends the next 50 years saying, well, that band was great. Why aren't you playing with them today? Well, I'm doing my solo stuff. I know, but the band were great. Get back together. So, as I say in the book, of the last 50 years, they've actually only spent 2 years together, two calendar years together. And they spent the other 48 being asked questions about why they're not together.
How unbelievable. And you having to chronicle all this must have been a bit of a nightmare for you, because you've got Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, you've got Crosby, Stills and Nash, you've got Crosby and Nash, you've got Stills and Young with a band. It's a nightmare.
Quite the opposite. It's a labour of love, I have to say. This is not a hack professional job for me. This is a labour of love. They're my favourite band. I'm unashamed about it. I've interviewed Crosby, Stills and Nash many times, never Neil Young, unfortunately, but I've met lots of other people who work with all of them, their friends, their lovers, and I brought all that experience and all that passion to the book.
And for you then, as such a fan, is there a period of their togetherness which for you was the kind of the peak? Or when would that be? What album would that be? On what formation of the band would that be?
In some ways, I think they reached their absolute peak with the first Crosby, Stills and Nash album,
yeah,
which is nothing against Neil Young, because he's an amazing songwriter, amazing performer. But there was something so pure about that sound of just the three guys originally, and they had that concept. And I suppose, in a way, it's interesting to think about one of these alternative histories. If they'd never recruited Neil Young, and if they'd stayed as Crosby, Stills and Nash, they might have stayed together for year after year after year, instead of which they got Neil Young together, they made Deja Vu, and then within about 9 months, they'd broken up for 4 years.
Wow.
And then they do a reunion tour in 1974 and break up again, and that's just the way they were, the four of them.
You can see why people are confused about them as a lineup, though. I mean, here I just played that track, as you mentioned there, Teach Your Children. Now, the album is called Crosby, Stills and Nash Greatest Hits, yet that track is actually incorrectly credited to Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. It's hard to work out who's on what, really, isn't it?
It is. And if you look at the Deja Vu album, which is the first Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young album, and then... Although they also listed the name of the bass player and drummer on the front, just to confuse it even more. But there we are. There's that record, and everybody at the time said, wow, it's amazing how well Neil Young fits his voices into Crosby, Stills and Nash's harmony sound. But he wasn't singing any harmonies with them. He only sings on two songs. He only plays on five.
Wow.
So you've got a CSNY album that makes his career, and he's only on half the record.
How unbelievable. Of course, they had a massive and lasting influence on American music and culture, and again, somewhat uniquely, were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for their work in other groups as well.
That's right. I'm pretty sure each of them is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, which must be the only band, I think, that's happened to.
Unbelievable. And again, I bring it back to, you know, to Graham Nash. I mean, he talks about leaving the Hollies and saying that once he heard his voice with the other two, that, you know, that was obviously the right thing to do. But then you think of the people that were in the Hollies, and there they are out singing Bus Stop, and there's Graham Nash with this supergroup. Quite a change.
I know. I spoke to one of the ex-Hollies who said that he went to see Woodstock at the cinema, and he'd left the Hollies by that point. What was his name? Eric Haydock, the original bass player of the Hollies, up till 66. But after he'd left the Hollies, his career had gone to pieces. He had no money. He managed to cobble together the, whatever it was, half a crown to go and see Woodstock at the cinema. And there Graham Nash is up on the huge wide screen. And he sat in his old raincoat in the stalls thinking, what happened? Where did I go wrong?
In fact, then he went to the bus stop to get his bus home. Yeah, absolutely.
Very good.
Absolutely. Well, you untangle it beautifully, I'm delighted to say, in the book, CSNY. There's a lot of stuff in there and some great pictures as well. So people's memories will come flooding back, I'm sure, when they read the book. Been good to talk to you, Peter. And I guess it's impossible to ask you what's your favourite track, if you were to pick one.
If I was going to pick one, it would have to be Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, first song on the first album.
I will play a bit of that for you. It goes on for about 7.5 minutes, to my knowledge, but I'll play a bit of it for you now. Thank you ever so much for talking to us this morning, Peter. All the best.
Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye.